Well, I think we've actually accomplished a lot in the last 2 months. New legislation actually asked us to provide through the web notification of a child death in an area with some very basic demographics. We wanted to go beyond what the legislation called for, and we put 5 years worth of historical data on there. So every death that's ever been reported to the hotline in the last 5 years, we put that information out there, not just the demographic information, but the child death reports, so that folks got a sense in terms of what's going on. The other piece of it, though, and I think just as important, is if we are really going to get our arms around child fatalities, we have to draw in the community. It's a misnomer to think that the department by itself can bring those numbers down. That's a community-by-community challenge, and the only way we can engage communities is to give them data that's relative to them and real to them. So I think that website does that. We have continued to change the way we do case practice. We were very incident-driven in the past. We're currently deploying the safety framework statewide. It takes our investigations away from looking at what I call snapshots in time and looking more at the motion picture of the family so that we understand all of the family dynamics. We understand whether situations are escalating or improving. And in doing so, we're able to make more informed decisions around child safety, and our interventions are more tailored, so we got a better chance of changing the trajectory for the kids and the families that we intercede with. So, and that's very positive stuff. The other thing, and I think this is, to me, I think it's a benchmark nationwide, and we got a lot of attention for it. We did use big data this year to identify the highest of high-risk cases. And if you looked at the child fatality data in this state, it's very clear that there's a certain profile around those cases. 88% of the kids were 3 and under. Lots of them had younger parents. There was oftentimes a paramour in the home that was not related to one or some or all of the children. There was usually a substance abuse issue or a domestic violence issue or a mental health issue, sometimes all three. And so when we know that, we can look at those cases differently.
Before the legislature passed the Child Welfare Act, I spoke with Neil Skeen, who helped with some of the research to create that law. And he was saying, beyond just policies and procedures, we need empowerment to make common sense decisions. How do you see the new law or what you've been doing in the last 2 months enabling those investigators on the ground to make those common sense decisions?
Well, I think the biggest thing the new law did is gave us more feet on the ground. You cannot make you can't make any good decisions if you have caseloads where the volume of work you're doing, the number of families, outpaces your ability to gather sufficient information to make good decisions. The legislature and the governor was a key in pushing this, but as part of the legislation, put 270 more FTEs on the ground that do child protection work. When those folks are hired, trained, and on the ground, and we hope to have that done by January 1, average caseloads for a CPI in this state should be about 10. Before, they were about 18. The average caseload was about 18. But that's deceiving because we because of our turnover rate, some of our newer CPIs had very small caseloads. Some of our more experienced CPIs had much larger caseloads than 18, some exceeding 30. And when you have caseloads that size, you just can't make good decisions. So I do think that folks have to be empowered to make decisions, to make them in real time. But it's incumbent upon us that we get the right people doing this work, that we provide the right training and tools, that we provide the right support in their decision-making, so that we want to empower them, but we also want them to make good, well-informed decisions. And I think we're on the road to doing that.